Move on to agenda item number 11, here, repeat offender. Chief O'Reilly, would you set us up here on the mechanism to proceed as you see it?
Yes, I will, Commissioner. Good afternoon, everyone. Officer Morris is going to be up here. And what I wanted to do was to, for the record, indicate the process that we have. Fisheries management meets with law enforcement on these cases, establishes the cases, and helps to work up the information. What we have today for each of the individuals, we'll have a slide that shows their 2015 current licenses and permits that are held by the individuals, their 2014 licenses as well. We also have the previous convictions, if they're there, for each individual. That's on the second slide. The third slide for each individual will be new convictions, recent convictions, which we'll be looking at today. And the last slide will be a suggested summons schedules and sanctions that came out of the law enforcement subcommittee that was adopted as guidelines by the committee in August of 2013. And the particular sanction will be attached to the fourth slide to show what's being recommended. The officer will provide the case information, and fisheries staff will provide the recommendation after that. And I think it's probably worthwhile refreshing everyone about the law enforcement subcommittee and to tell you how broad that approach was. The law enforcement subcommittee met three different times in 2013, and there's a guidelines document, but there also is a support document of the entire proceedings that the commission members were provided previously. And of note here is that each of our advisory committees, and today it's the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee, are providing their information, their scores essentially, on which violations could be graduated from the most serious down to the least serious. And that occurred with all of our advisory groups. It also occurred with law enforcement and fisheries management. So collectively, there was a lot of input, time spent on developing these guidelines. And I think with that, Officer Morris will be able to start. And if you'd be able to.
One second here. I want to lay some ground rules here before we move forward here and make sure that everybody is understanding what it is here and what is not here. And these are, this is hearings on administrative sanctions pursuant to convictions in court of violations of the fisheries regulations and laws. Revocation of licenses in this case here is brought under Code Section 28.2232. The commission may revoke or prohibit the issuance, reissuance, or renewal of any licenses after a hearing held. Thank you, sir. To 10 days notice to the applicant or licensee, it finds that person has violated any provision of this subtitle. The duration and revocation, the duration of the revocation and prohibition shall be fixed upon the, by the commission of up to a maximum of 2 years, with the withdrawal of all fishing privileges conferred by this title during that period, taking into account evidence of repeated or habitual disregard for the conservation, health, and safety laws and regulations, abusive conduct and behavior towards officers, and the severity of any damages that have occurred or might have occurred to the natural resources, the public health, or the seafood industry. This is not a court. We are not retrying these cases. This is an administrative sanctions hearing here to determine the appropriate penalty, if anything, for the convictions that underlie the offenses that brought us to this point. So, just want to make sure that we're all clear. There will be some latitude here But these are the focuses that we're working on. We're not retrying the cases. To that end,
what staff will do will assist the officer, and if the commission wants to see other slides, we'll go back, then I'll take care of that.
Just one little comment. We need to change the name of this. This is not necessarily repeat offenders anymore. Just be offenders, serious offenders, because, you know, a lot of these health things, one offense, we see them even just one.
Sure. That's a good point. We should relabel the agenda item for future.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. David Turner. Is Mr. David A. Turner present?
He is not, and I am not representing.
He was in the hallway earlier today before lunch.
He left.
Chief, could you yell in the hallway to see if Mr. David Turner is present? Thank you. Let them reflect. Ms. Sullivan, you represent some of the people here today?
I represent nine of the 10.
Okay, that's correct. But you do not represent David Turner. Okay, thank you. And for the record, that's Counselor Ann Sullivan. All right, let's proceed with the case. Mr. Turner is not here, but
staff would note that Mr. Turner does have 2015 licensing permits at this time.
All right. On July 14th, 2014, a Monday, Mr. Turner, operating and on the boat Lucy Annette, was found.
Thank you. Officer Morris, you actually weren't here present earlier today. Anyone in law enforcement who may be testifying here who was not sworn in this morning, please stand forward up, raise your right hand here. You hereby swear the testimony you may give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
On July 14th, 2014, a Monday, approximately 6:30 in the morning, Turner, who was on the boat Lucy Annette, was found 268 feet in the condemned area off of Huntington Park, between Huntington Park and Hilton School, along the Newport News shoreline in the James River. Mr. Turner was on board the boat. He was issued a summons under 28.2-810, which is the health code dealing with condemned shellfish areas and removal of shellfish from those areas. He was subsequently convicted in Newport News General District Court on September 25th of 2014 and was assessed a penalty of $300 and cost for that violation. Did you want me to go with the staff recommendation? Oh, okay. All right. There was also a scraping private ground without a permit to do so. This was a date of 6/17, June 17th of 2014, and convicted on July 3rd of 2014. And I was issued by another officer, which I don't see here at this time. Beg your pardon, but there's a numerous paperwork or a multitude of paperwork for Mr. Turner, and I don't see who the officer was or the summons
at this moment.
We have it.
Officer Corey.
Bill Curry.
Yeah, it's Officer Corey.
And as I said, he was convicted of that on July 3rd of 2014. Okay, here it is here. He was assessed a $250 fine plus cost in the city of Newport News on that at that time.
Chief Harrell, we'll read the recommendation for a two-year revocation. Officer Morris has given you the case information. Also, please note that previously Mr. Turner's commercial licenses were revoked under 28.2.232 of the Code of Virginia for 12 months, starting December 10, 2013, ending December 9, 2014, as well as having a one-year probation that lasted from December 10, 2014 to December 9, 2015. Owing to repeated disregard for conservation and health regulations, the two warm water violations, and harvesting oysters without shellfish tags or an aquaculture permit. So for today, in accordance with Section 28.2.232 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the Commission revoke all Mr. Turner's licenses to take or catch fish, shellfish, or marine organisms for a period of 2 years from the date of this Commission meeting, January 27, 2015, through January 26, 2017, and also to revoke Mr. Turner's fishing privileges within the Commonwealth's tidal waters for a period of 2 years from the date of this Commission meeting, January 27, 2015, through January 26, 2017.
Chief, just so that I'm clear about this, these offenses were undertaken while he was under license revocation?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. O'Reilly here, what's the potential fallout for this type of offense here for the condemned waterways as far as the industry or human health?
One thing I would like to say first, if the Commission does not know this, that we have Mr. Stiles here today from the Department, Division of Shellfish Sanitation of the Virginia Department of Health, who certainly is well experienced with all these issues. My understanding is there could be serious consequences. Mainly, we're looking at the problem of condemned areas that have been condemned for a long time. You're looking at human-borne pathogens that could be problematic in that anyone getting sick would be subject to severity and degrees of illnesses depending on what the pathogens were. The other part of this is it would make it very complicated potentially to be able to figure out which areas contributed to this problem, and without knowing that, there could be widespread closures. In other words, it would not necessarily be known that the Hilton area was the area, and it could be that a significant part, or maybe only a smaller part, of the genus would be closed. So this also talks about other fishermen's income, industry income with closures. It's very serious. It's much different than the Commission looked at in terms of Vibrio vulnificus or Vibrio parahemolyticus. With those situations, there are warm water regulations. With this situation, the problem could be anywhere from a Vibrio chlora to some type of virus that perhaps is there, hepatitis A. You know, it's unknown until the cases turn up and someone does get ill.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Cedra.
For the record, if you look at the summons that was issued for the second violation, what you will see is that the July 3rd date that it indicates as date of conviction is actually the first court date for the offense occurring on June 17, 2014. That date is correct. If you look at the bottom left-hand corner, the summons is what the judge fills out. You'll find the conviction was actually July 17, 2014. Can you concur with that?
That's correct, Your Honor. Thank you, sir.
Any questions? Either Officer Morris or Chief O'Reilly? Mr. Zedra.
This was a condemned area. How is it marked?
It's marked, well, it is part of private oyster ground that is leased by Mr. Green, and the boats were on his ground, on his leased property, to take oysters from the clean area. The commission has been with Mr. Green and shown him where the condemned line runs through his ground. And I believe Mr. Butler, I believe I'm aware that he has helped Mr. Green by showing him where that the line would be through his ground. And Mr. Green was advised that he needed to, if he wanted it marked, he would need to mark that with poles that would relate to where was clean and where was condemned. And a little bit, backing up just a little bit, the reason we were watching this area was because of numerous complaints, and I mean extremely numerous complaints about boats, commercial boats, working in what they thought was the condemned area. So we were not there just happening to be there. We were watching this area.
Do you note the weather conditions or anything like that at the time of the offense? What I'm concerned about here is whether a boat is in a good area and then the wind blows a real...
Not in the... In the case of tide, the tide runs up and down the river. So does that condemned line. So the tide would not wash the boat one way or the other, more than a few yards maybe. The wind was negligible that day and on the days that we were watching in that area, but on that particular day it was negligible. I don't remember where it was blowing out of, but it was not affecting the boats in their movements, which was with a scrape or a dredge. They were circling like you normally would dredge or scrape oysters on private ground. And this particular boat, 200 and some feet into 268 feet is not a weather condition cause behind that.
Did he give you any reason why he was there?
He stated he wasn't in the condemned area and repeated that. Mr. Turner was a special case in this because to do what he was doing on private ground, he did not need commission licenses. So he could work with the revocation in that area, and he did not require the licenses. The permit the boat had was gotten in his mate's name, and that was on the boat. So he was permitted to work that area with the other individual, but unfortunately he was caught in the condemned area.
Thank you.
Mr. Kyle, could you please come forward? I think I'd like to flesh out a little bit more at the human health components to all this. Do you hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, Selfie God?
I do.
Please state your name for the record and explain to the commission your job.
Okay, I'm Keith Skiles. I'm the director of the Division of Shelby Sanitation in the Health Department. Our program does all the water quality work. We spend 12 months a year going out doing assessments for sewage treatment plants. We do about 25,000 water samples a year. We have have over 2,000 sites we visit every 4 to 6 weeks to do our monitoring. So we expend a lot of effort to try to draw these lines where we think the risk lies. And so It's really central to our program and to the public health that they're followed. I can't add a lot to what Rob added for the public health concerns that are associated with us, but a lot of these issues have long incubation periods. So the fact that you don't see somebody get sick tomorrow because they had an oyster today, hepatitis A, could be 60 days. So if you try to remember what you had to eat last week, try to figure that out for 60 days from now, and that's how a lot of these cases are out there, but they're not necessarily attributed to oysters. So this area in particular is closed because of the sewage treatment plant outfall. The area has been assessed for dilution and die-off of pathogens that are associated with that outfall. So it's closed because of a clear risk we've known for a long time that sewage-borne pathogens can make you sick. And so it's really important that everyone take that in consideration when they're out on the water. So I'm glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Erskine.
Keith, can you speak to maybe the severity of a recall that would take place in the industry if, for example, oysters that may have a virus, maybe a norovirus or something like that in it, and it's an undetermined area that it was taken from? What would be the scope of that recall for the entire industry?
The scope of the recall, the recall would be initiated based on the connection of the tag information associated with the product that caused the illness, and depending on how that's labeled, that would at least start where the recall would be drawn from. So if our tags say James River, it would cause a closure of the entire James River. If they have a portion of the river, we would start there, and as long as no other cases came in, we could possibly limit it to that. So there are a lot of people that work in sections of the James River that would be impacted, and a lot of those guys are out there trying to follow that line and adhere to the rules. So another problem that we have with these sorts of things is the public doesn't always hear the whole picture. They hear that people got sick from shellfish. And so instead of just looking for one area to not buy, they stop buying. And so that has a huge impact. These kinds of problems are what created the National Shellfish Sanitation Program, because the outbreaks that were associated with oysters caused a pretty much a discontinuing of purchasing of oysters on the East Coast. So it is not just a public health problem, but it's an economic one as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Zedra.
How many oysters would a person have to eat that we admit that it's contaminated and it's got this virus? How many oysters would it take to get a person sick?
For norovirus, they say it can take less than 10 viral particles, and a person who is sick would shed billions. One person who's sick would shed billions of virus particles. So it would only take one oyster or even a part of an oyster to make you sick if it's been contaminated.
Thank you very much. That would be fine. Well, want to go back over the staff recommendation again, please?
Yes, and the one thing just to point out, which all the four slides will have, is the recommendation area that came from the law enforcement subcommittee commission endorsed in 2013. And you can see in this particular case, harvesting oysters or clams from a condemned area. Typically, one conviction can be a 12-month revocation. However, in the case that you're looking at with Mr. Turner, because of his history and his previous revocation, the recommendation is a 2-year suspension. So in accordance with Section 282.232 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the commission revoke all Mr. Turner's licenses to take or catch fish, shellfish, or marine organisms for a period of 2 years from the date of this commission meeting, January 27, 2015, through January 26, 2017, and revoke Mr. Turner's fishing privileges within the Commonwealth's tidal waters for a period of 2 years from the date of this commission meeting, January 27th, 2015 through January 26th, 2017.
The matter is before the commission. For discussion action, Mr. Zegar.
I move we accept the staff recommendation for 2 years.
I'll second.
Motion by Mr. Zegar, second by Mr. Neal. Mr. Erskine.
Mr. O'Reilly, is my understanding that that's the maximum penalty that can be imposed, a two-year revocation?
Yes, 2 years from this date.
Okay, thank you.
Matters before the commission. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. Motion passes unanimously. Mr. Timothy Charles Breen.
So you can see in 2015, these are the licenses held.
One second, Mr. O'Reilly, here. Mr. Breen, let me swear you in here. We'll get it out of the way now. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. I'll allow that. Please come forward to the microphone here. Thank you. Identify yourself for the record, please.
I will. My name is Ann Sullivan, and I'm counsel of record for all of the remaining gentlemen on your agenda. I am here today with the full recognition that we are not here to retry the criminal conviction. That is understood. My clients understand that. I did not represent them in lower court. They are aware that they let their appeal periods run, and there is no avenue to contest the conviction that they have received. However, as I have investigated this case very thoroughly, I think there are very important things that the commission needs to understand about the circumstances under which they received their tickets, their particular defenses to the ticket, and some of the practices that have occurred within the law enforcement division related to this particular day. And this is one day in the life of these nine oystermen. I will begin by telling you that Mr. Green is here and would like to testify about certain events that occurred prior to the gentleman's arrest. And to summarize what the evidence would be, it was that he was notified that Mr. Morris was intent on going to this oyster ground and ticketing specific individuals for offenses that had been reported to him prior, as you heard the testimony with respect to Mr. Turner, that other boats had been seen in this particular area in what was believed to be the condemned waters. Mr. Morris went out with the names of several boats written on his hand in order to find those boats on this particular date. Mr. Green learned, because Mr. Morris said that he was headed out to these oyster grounds on the week before these offenses occurred, that he was going out to get the men whose boats he had been reported to him. Mr. Green, having several nine oystermen working for him, called every one of them, all the captains, and said, Mr. Morris is coming out here on this date. Everybody be especially careful. So they had the heads up. Now, these are not people who want to lose their livelihoods. They're not people that would willingly violate the law. And when you look at their records, they've been law-abiding citizens for the most part their entire lives. There are no criminal convictions. There are very minor things that in some cases go back as far as 1999, and there's some of them with no records at all. And I'll have to go through each one as I plead their case for mitigation. But when he approached their boat, each one of the captains on these boats asked for them to check the coordinates on their GPS systems. He refused to check the coordinates on their systems. Each one of them said, we are not fishing within the condemned waters. We know where they are. We are abiding by the law. He refused, absolutely refused to check their coordinates on the boat. Said he was going to call in his own coordinates, which he did. Called them into the surveyor. There was no piece of paper, no documentation of the coordinates, just a telephone call to Mr. Butler to see if they were within the condemned water. So they were whatever Mr. Morris said they were at the time and place. He then ordered them to take the oysters off the boat. And instead of putting the oysters back in the condemned area, he ordered them to go to the sanctuary. And instead of marking the sanctuary with yellow flags indicating that there are condemned oysters being put there, he did not do that. So the law enforcement official himself put these condemned oysters in an area of the river that was not protected and not marked as being contaminated. With respect to this condemned area at all, I think the evidence will be that it was marked many, many years ago. It has not been tested. When I spoke to Mr. Stiles in preparation for this case, it was marked by dye when Newport News was first setting up a drainage system. So we don't even know at this point that these oysters were, in fact, at risk for poisoning the public. None of the oysters were tested. I understand it's a condemned area. I understand the concern. But on deeper analysis, it is not potentially the same risk that has been described in rather summary terms before we begin. With respect to the positions of this boat, these boats, there's only one boat that admits that it was in the condemned area at all, and that is the West boat. And that is the boat that had mechanical difficulties, blew into the area, and he will admit that he blew into the area of the condemned area, that he was not dredging at the time that he blew in there. He did not dredge while he was in there. His son had to climb up the poles in order to fix whatever was wrong with the boat, came back down, and that he was the only boat that was ever in the condemned water. I've looked at the coordinates that Mr. Morris brought before the commission, and these boats couldn't get to some of the areas that he said they were fishing in. They were drawn 2 to 3 feet of water in that area. These boats can't even go there. I don't know what occurred. I don't know why it occurred, but I have serious concerns with what went down that day and how it went down. In addition to that, Mr. Green, who knew what was going on, called back to the commission. And he asked the commission, please come out and verify what Mr. Morris has done. He called two individuals. And Mr. Green is a retired firefighter. He's been of service to this community and this country and has a stellar record. He called Captain Berryman and said, please send another boat out here to verify what Mike Morris is doing. I want another boat to check the GPS. Mr. Berryman said he'd have to check on that and get back to him. He then called again Mr. Lauderman and said, I'm sorry, I don't know your rank.
Chief
Lauderman. And said, please come, check, see what occurred. Let's look at the GPS on these boats. They said, no, we're going to rely on Mr. Mike Morrison's discretion. And they never sent another boat out there. One of the boats, the Sonora, when they got to the dock, asked Corey to come check the GPS on the boat. He wrote down the coordinates. The coordinates said that he was within the legal fishing grounds. Those coordinates were not reported to the court. Now, Mr. Morris said that, well, you could alter your GPS. Well, there is no way to alter the GPS. all you can do, if you shut your GPS off, it shows that there's been a turn off of the GPS, for those of you that are familiar with it. There's a gap in the GPS recording. You can't alter where the boat has been. And if you looked at the GPS, you would see that it hadn't been altered. And in this case, that wasn't done. It was asked by responsible people. It was asked by people who were not subject to penalty. It was asked by the defendants themselves, and it wasn't done. And to a man, they contend that they were innocent of the charges for which they've been convicted. In addition to that, the weather was dreadful. The wind was blowing. It was a bad day. They were also ticketed with leaving the dock before sunrise. All of those charges were thrown out. You couldn't even see the boats at the time that he wrote on the ticket. So as I go through and make the presentation for each of these individuals, I wanted you to have the background of why we contend that there should be mitigation in this circumstance and why we have concerns about the law enforcement process as it was applied. With respect to the law that you're attempting to and will, of course, administer today, I would note that in the materials that have been provided with respect to the records, it states that your guidelines are mandatory. This commission has taken the position at the Virginia Court of Appeals that these guidelines are not mandatory, and your counsel has written a fabulous brief with respect to that very point that I've read and considered. But the legal position of the counsel is that the guidelines are not mandatory. And I would also submit to you that in considering what disposition to make of these cases, that you consider that some of the offenses that they have used to give a flavor for the history of some of these people. And again, these people do, other than Mr. Turner, it is my belief that they do not have extensive records. And I would just caution you that the guidelines that were adopted in August of 2013 for your sanctions. It was only on July 1st, 2013 that you were allowed to revoke all fishing privileges. And I just also like to make the comment that when you're looking back at what happened in 1999 with some boys on a boat, you think about the fact that they had no idea in 1999 that those offenses would be used today to take away their livelihood. And all of them are commercial fishermen. This is their livelihood, how they support their families. The final thing I'd like to say about it, and you know, I'll make this plea up front as you go through it, but you have the discretion to revoke certain permits and privileges. You are not required to revoke all. You have the power to revoke all. But when you revoke all, you can prohibit these gentlemen from supporting their family when it's not oyster season. For fishing for things that they've never committed a violation. They can't crab. They can't do anything. They can't even go off sea fishing. When you take away all the privileges, which you're not required to do under the law as it's administered, in my opinion, you're hurting them to the maximum. And there is an avenue for you to find a lesser penalty for each of these gentlemen as we go through the case.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sullivan. Officer Morris.
Commissioner.
Mr. Erskine.
Can I ask a question of her real quick?
Yeah, please.
I just had a quick question. You made a statement that somebody notified all captains to be especially aware of MPOs in that area on that specific day. Why to be especially careful or aware of MPOs, why would they act any differently that day than any other day that they were out there fishing?
Because we wanted to be sure that there were no mistakes made. And he will respond to that. And the judge in Newport News apparently asked the same question. because he wanted to be sure that nobody was drifting, that everybody was paying attention. And this is an area that they've attempted to mark with PVC pipe. But the PVC pipe is not always there. If a boater ties to it, it can move. I mean, there are problems with the manner in which this area is marked. So, you know, just be really careful. Don't go anywhere near that line. And that was the direction that was given.
Thank you.
Officer Morris. Chief O'Reilly here.
Yes, and...
matter of Timothy Breen.
Right, and based on one of the comments by Ms. Sullivan, I guess the idea would be, you see the 2015 licenses and permits. If the commission at some time needs to know what other licenses and permits these gentlemen held in 2014 to get an indication of what else they did, that can also be provided.
Okay. Please proceed, Officer.
On the broad statement that was just made, there was, I take issue with that I was out headhunting that particular day. I was out doing my job. I had nothing written down as to who I was looking for. The commercial watermen, their brother watermen, and the industry called me on numerous occasions saying, this is happening. Our Dr. Wesson had commented that there was some activity over there that needed looking at. And going on that, my partner and I had been watching this area the week previous. We went to that area. We did not catch anybody working in the wrong area, but we took note of, from our vantage point, where the stakes were that we wanted to check out, and we did get readings, GPS readings, on particular stakes that were affirmable so that we could determine if a boat was working near that stake. He was obviously in a polluted area, and then we would go and get the exact GPS readings and deal with that, which we did on that Monday. We had no agenda to go out headhunting about a particular boat. There are numerous people in this group I've never had problems with in my 40-some years of working with the commission. They're friendly to me, and I'm friendly to them. Frankly, I was surprised that they got caught up in this, but be that as it may, I have to treat everybody the same with what I find.
You've had a long career, Officer Morris. Let's move forward to the particulars at hand on Mr. Timothy Breen.
All right. Mr. Breen was on the Lucia Net with Mr. Turner, and that boat was found, as I said before, 268 feet into the condemned area, and that was confirmed on that day that we went out there. After watching them work and not drifting into the shoal waters, that area is shoal in places. But these boats are dead rise, flat bottom boats that can operate during a particular tide in very shallow water, which they all were, including the boat that she alluded to, were circling and dredging and not broken down and stopped and to drift into that area. Mr. Breen was on board. He was issued the summons and was subsequently convicted in Newport News. He was issued the summons by Officer Corey, and he was convicted on July 14th. I'm sorry, September 25th of 2014, and a fine was set of $300 and cost. And he is has no other. Okay, I'm sorry. There was a date of offense for 28.2510, which I believe is an uncalled oyster violation. I believe that was Lovato. And he was convicted subsequently on January 23rd of 2014. and that was in Isle of Wight Court with a $50 fine and cost of court.
Chief O'Reilly.
Mr. Commissioner.
I'm sorry, we have a question from Mr.
Yeah, let me, while he's at this point here, you have copies of the summons. Is this on Mr. Breen?
Yes.
All right, the summons on the first charge there of take, catch, and remove oysters from a condemned area, it indicates he had an attorney. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. He had Mr. Johnny Cope.
Okay, and it indicates he pled not guilty. Is that correct?
Correct.
And the court found him guilty. Is that correct?
Correct.
Well, let's go to the other violation here, the other summons for taking and possession of unculled oysters. Now, on that in that particular summons, he pled guilty. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And then he was found guilty.
Right.
And what is an unculled oyster?
The process of separating undersized public oysters or oysters from the public rock is called culling. You take the acceptable oysters and throw them into the bottom of the boat and or into the baskets as of now. The undersized oysters under 3 inches and the shell, which is a bycatch, and it's illegal to have more than 4 quarts of shell or undersized oysters in a bushel of oysters. That the shell and the small oysters are raked back overboard from the cull board. And so unculled would be improperly culled or not culled and had too many shell and small oyster in a bushel that was checked.
When does this culling process take place in reference to when they pick the oysters up?
They, by law, in the 28 code, they have to take the oysters from the bottom of the river either by hand tong, which is the opposing rakes on the sticks, or a scrape or a dredge, and put it up on the board and empty that containment or that catching device onto the cull board. And they have to go on the cull board first and then be removed from the cull board into the hold of the vessel. And then the illegal part of that catch has to be scraped back overboard immediately.
All right, so wouldn't be any error, I mean, any the fact that they're in the unculled ones were in the bottom of the boat already is a violation in and of itself. Is that correct?
That's correct. Depending on how they got there, there is one other violation that could have occurred. But in this case, just looking at the totality of the information, and at that moment, anything that's in the hold of the vessel, in containers or in loose in the bottom of the boat, has supposedly been culled and has to meet that the specifications of that cull.
And whose responsibility is it to cull the oysters?
There again, if the person who is, let's say, tonging the oysters, if he decides to bypass the cull board and put them directly into the hold of the vessel, that's a term called tonging in. And that's a violation in itself, but it has to be visually observed by an officer to be a violation. If the tonger or the catchers mechanically put those oysters up on the cull board, then it's to the cull person and his or people that are down at the board culling the oysters. Sometimes a tonger will cull as well. So that you might have two people tonging on a boat, putting them in, or 2 people working a scrape or a dredge, putting them on the cull board. They put the dredge in back in the water, or they put the tongs back in the water, and then on a dredge boat or a scrape boat, the 2 people that are working and emptying the dredge or the scrape will then actually stand there and cull the oysters into the bottom of the boat and scrape the bad stuff back overboard.
Mr. Breen, give you any reason why he would have so many of these unculled oysters on board?
That was Officer Lovato that wrote that summary.
All right, thank you. No further questions.
I have a question. That's on the condemned area one. I see right here where he was on the vessel. Who was running the vessel, Lucy, in that day?
I believe it was Mr. Turner.
Well,
was operating the vessel.
Well, doesn't the operator of the vessel have, you know, he has control of the vessel where the vessel goes?
Well, Mr. Breen had the permit in his name.
But
so Mr. Turner was, because he did not have the ability to have the permit in his name or whatever.
That really doesn't matter. The captain
well,
of the boat is,
that's
is,
true.
Is obviously responsible for where the boat goes, period.
That's true.
You know,
but,
so, I mean.
It is, there's culpability for anybody on board that boat as far as taking something that could make somebody sick.
I'll agree with you, but still, he doesn't have no place to go. He can't swim ashore, you know, and when he's on there working, you know, he's working, doing what he's doing. You know, as far as where the boat goes, I don't think he had any idea where he was at personally, as far as being in the condemned area. He's just, I know he had the license, but as far as the captain of the boat, he has the ultimate decision on where that boat goes.
Any other questions of Officer Morris? Ms. Sullivan, would it be easier for you to go over the particulars for any cross-examining on each case, person by person?
Well, there are certain points with respect to the reason on that that are particular.
Well, then let's ask some questions right now and get your end of things here. As it pertains to Officer Morris's testimony.
Yes, sir. Officer Morrison, did you call in two coordinates on Lucy Arnett to the surveyor, Mr. Butler?
I called in a couple coordinates, but the one that I called in that was used in the court case was the one where he was working beyond the stake that we had previously determined was the condemned area. And he was obviously the Lucy Annett and the Sonora were working very close together. And at times it looked like they were kind of dancing around each other. But at one point, the Lucy Annett went inshore of the other boat and went over there and was quite a distance inside of the stake that we had previously determined was in the condemned area. And so that's why he was issued for that stake, not for where he actually went, because he did go further in than that. So he actually... The reading that we got was on the stake that we had determined before that point was in the condemned area, and he exceeded that, so he was actually on that day more than 800 and some feet into the polluted area.
Okay, so to answer my question, you called in multiple coordinates on the Lacey Arnett on the day that you cited him with the offense. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and some of the coordinates that you called in on the Lucy Arnett were outside of the condemned area.
So Lucy Arnett, and yes, they were in the clean area of the private ground.
Okay.
That was just one coordinate.
And you also called in a coordinate for a post marking the condemned area. Is that correct? It didn't have anything to do with the vessel.
It did have something to do with the vessel because he exceeded that point inshore of that, to the east of that stake.
Okay, and then you called in a third coordinate?
No.
Oh, you only called in two?
As far as I recollect, only two.
Okay, so was the,
and the reason that
you, was the coordinate that you called in the coordinate of the post that he exceeded?
Yes.
Okay, so when you reported to the court the location of his vessel within the condemned water, you were not giving an accurate rendition of
I
where
was
his
most
vessel
was. I was most assuredly giving an accurate position.
You gave
because
a,
he
an
was
accurate
working,
coordinate, did you not?
He was working, no, I did not.
You gave a coordinate of a post, not a vessel. Am I
a
correct?
Post that was at the interior of his circling, as well as what he exceeded to the east, deeper into the condemned area.
So the answer is you gave a coordinate of a post, correct?
I gave a pre, yes, I did.
Okay. All right,
where the vessel was and where it exceeded.
Okay. And you said that you didn't have any particular feelings about any of the poisonings that were working on that day. But in point of fact, weren't you after David Turner as a...
Ms. Sullivan, hold on a second, please. Let me interrupt here. We have convictions in court that are not before us here. They've been tried. They were defended. There was conviction in court with another attorney here. Don't want to retry the case. If you have some legitimate questions about whether or not there was an error in conviction in the courts, that's a matter to take up on a court of appeal.
I'm just trying to address the specific testimony that this gentleman has given in support of the administrative revocation, and I'm finding some holes in it that I'm trying to address. I'm not going beyond what his direct testimony was. I take your comments to heart, and I'm not retrying his case, but these are specific points that he made in reference to this proceeding and the administrative revocation that he had no bone to pick with any of these people. He's been friends with them. He's known them for years. That was his testimony.
Please.
I say, with some help from the administrative staff, I can show you the court. Officer, those are the coordinates. I plotted the coordinates of what you called in to Mr. Butler. Can you show me where the stake was that you called in?
Excuse me, Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Zedra.
This commission is dealing with a finding of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt of these charges where all the defenses would have been raised at that point. And we can take judicial notice of these summonses here and the convictions thereof. To go back into where this boat was or who did this or whether the wind was blowing or whether the vessel was broken down, those are facts that are pertinent to the case in chief in court. And so the questions, I understand what counsel is going, but the fact of the matter is the defendant is convicted, period. We can't reverse that conviction, even if the trial court was wrong. Let's say the trial court was wrong. That doesn't give us any authority to go in there and set aside this conviction or whether the boat was within this area or that area. That's already been determined by the court. And most of these, the defendants had counsel. They probably should have had this counsel, okay, because, you know, she's doing a great job. And so, but we can't go back in there and retry this case. That's my position anyway. So to spend a long period of time to go back where this vessel was or wasn't, we're not revoking it whether it was or wasn't. It was based on his conviction. And that's so I would ask that be limited strictly, not retrying his case. That's what we're doing here, is retrying his case.
Yeah, I appreciate that, sir, and I'm not trying to retry the case, as I said in my opening statement. I'm just trying to address the specific testimony that he's given to this commission. And I'll try to refrain from anything that looks like a retrying case.
Ms. Sullivan, I am more inclined to agree with the only judge in the room here, who is Mr. Zedra, who actually is a judge. And I think that we are right now coming dangerously close to retrying the case. We have three provisions here within the Code of Virginia that are the guiding principles for this hearing, and that is setting the duration, if any, of license suspension and title fishing privileges, evidence of repeated or habitual disregard for conservation, health, and safety laws and regulations, abusive conduct towards officers, the severity of the damages that were caused or could be caused. Those are the things that are guiding the commission's decision. The placement of the poles, what Officer Moore said or didn't say to anybody else, is part of the underlying court case here. It doesn't pertain to any of these matters that are currently before the commission in their evaluation. So let's tailor where we're going here accordingly, please.
And I'll just proffer for the record, if it may reach the circuit court, that I'm only addressing the issues that are presented in the commission.
Please proceed.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Reilly.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. So the last slide is to show you something similar from before, harvesting oysters or clams from a contemned area with sanctions that one time, one conviction, could be a 12-month suspension. I did want to point out that it is correct that these guidelines are something the Commission endorsed in 2013 with the understanding that these guidelines will be modified as we go through time and as a number of cases come before the Commission. I'll also point out, although it's not stated exactly how much over the culling tolerance down here was, the proceedings of the staff of law enforcement, the colonel and lieutenant colonel, and my staff members, when they look at this, what you're seeing is one of the charges. You're not seeing activity on the culling charge added to it. That's something they have to debate and deliberate and come up with a recommendation, which I'll read now. In accordance with Section 282.232 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the Commission revoke all Mr. Breen's licenses to take or catch fish, shellfish, or marine organisms for a period of 1 year from the date of this Commission meeting, January 27, 2015, through January 26, 2016, and also to revoke Mr. Breen's fishing privileges within the Commonwealth's tidal waters for a period of 1 year from the date of this Commission meeting, January 27, 2015, through January 26, 2016.
Chief, would you discuss a little bit here the potential impact to the industry and to the other ramifications of these particular offenses?
Well, I think the situation indicated by Mr. Skiles is something the Commission should. It was information to me on how the longevity of these pathogens from a condemned area, how extensive they might be before you know of the illness. But there's no doubt that once illnesses are noted and determined, this could result in anywhere from small to major closures of harvest areas, which would have a significant, substantial effect on other harvesters as well as the industry. We are in a situation where the last fiscal year we climbed from a low from about 2003 of 23,000 bushels of oysters from public and private ground up to 530,000 bushels. Expectations are that that type of situation will again occur, and any type of interruption to that that is from these type of incidents does impact all the way up the Commonwealth's chain. So I think it's very substantial, and the pathogens are the main issue, which is a little different for the Commission that went through the warm water issues earlier.
Ms. Sullivan, do you have any questions?
I do. Sir, with respect to the conviction for culling, the site that he was given was
1 second, please.
You want to see
28.25 pence right here. Okay. I can read it to you if you want. It's only a paragraph. Okay.
Correct. They are tagging specific
only incorrect if we can rely on the areas that indicate on the tax are correct. And that's one of the first things that we do. What would be looked at is production in certain areas. So you would get involved as an agency to look at that area as well. So the board's that situation.
And do you know the last time this area was set for any flooded sources?
Polluted,
contaminated.
Mr. Stiles could tell you, they said they had a 12-month program. So
was there any reference to this particular area?
Mm-hmm.
Any reference to the testing of this particular area where they're charged?
You would have to ask Mr. Stiles.
Yes, well, that's my answer. And with respect to putting oysters taken from a condemned site, are they required, when they're put back in the water, to be marked with a yellow flag?
It seems they went to a sanctuary, what you indicated, and I think there's code section that indicates that confiscated oysters should go to a sanctuary.
Should they be marked with a yellow flag?
You'll have to ask law enforcement, because if they go to a sanctuary, it doesn't matter.
Only if they're transplanted for cleansing would they be marked with a yellow flag until that cleansing is over with.
Not sure how the question and answering are going here.
I think the answer was no.
Okay, you don't know the answer.
No, I know a sanctuary is where the oysters
can go. And if they are to be filtered and cleaned, they would be all
flat. On the relay process, yes.
Thank you.
Yes, so may I ask whether or not Chief O'Reilly's testimony here, if you'll stipulate that for the duration of these proceedings? It does seem to be fairly all-encompassing with everyone at stake here.
Unless there's a particular fact pattern that develops differently.
Then that would be a yes, stipulate, unless there's something that's a little different about a particular case?
Yes, sir. And I do not stipulate that this at all.
Oh, absolutely. I understand that. Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chief. Mr. Skiles, will you please come forward? Oh. We have a question, Mr. Cliff. Of Chief O'Reilly?
Well, just on this condemned stuff, period.
Okay.
You know, this is going to be a big thing. This, you know, you got, people's got grime, got condemned grime right on top of clean grime. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking, every creek that I've ever been in at certain times of year, there are signs posted when you can harvest, when you can't. Well, whose responsibility is it to post these signs?
The health department sets the markings, and the marine police post the signs.
So if we have condemned area coincide with cleaned area, shouldn't that be marked with just more than just a PVC pole that can float away? I mean, I'm sorry here. I mean, if this is going to be a health issue and going to be a big deal, then maybe, you know, I'm just looking at it as, you know, 250 feet might sound like a long ways, but on the water, it's not when you're running a 45-foot boat. When you make a circle, you try to turn it in 250-some feet. So, you know, you can look down for 2-3 seconds and look back up, and you're not there. You know, you can be right on the edge of it. But what I'm getting at is, if this is going to be so contentious, because this is going to happen more and more, then I feel like something should be done to really mark these condemned areas, if they're condemned, period. If they're so close to the clean bottom.
Okay. Mr. Skiles? Mr. Zietra?
I would ask the testimony that Mr. Is it Stiles? Skiles gave initially be applied to every case rather than him having to come up here just like he did in the other gentleman here, instead of him having to testify over again for everybody's case. And so for the record, if counsel would agree that his testimony is the same testimony for every defendant.
I'm hoping we get to that point, but I think Ms. Sullivan deserves a chance to cross-examine and to flush this out a little bit till she's comfortable here. So to that end, if we could just to make sure that we're all moving on the same page to reach the same stipulated points here. Mr. Skiles, will you please basically continue the discussion that you were having before and repeat that?
Okay, well, one of the points that is made is about how the condemnation is in place. There are lots of different ways that we establish condemnations. They aren't all because of a sample analysis. Some are based on a risk. It's a dilution model. There's a pipe out there that's discharging 15 million gallons of sewage a day, and we model how the dilution and dispersion of the contaminants that come out of that pipe will move through the estuary. And so that's how we establish that. And so as long as the estuary doesn't change and the volume of the pipe or the volume of the discharge or the location of the pipe, those things don't change, the condemnation won't change. It's based on a potential risk. We can't possibly test for every bacterial and viral pathogen in every oyster to tell whether there's a risk. We've known for 100 years that sewage-contaminated food will make you sick. So our idea is to keep you from harvesting sewage-contaminated food. So that's one of the points I wanted to make. Are there other questions associated with the
potential impact to human health here for eating a tainted oyster?
Well, hepatitis A is probably the worst of the potential pathogens that we would see in this day and time. It's something that can cause permanent liver damage. It's a severe illness. It puts people out of work. Norovirus, with hepatitis A in Virginia, over the past 10 years, we've averaged 40 to 100 cases per year. No one always knows how those persons got that illness, but they do happen in Virginia and elsewhere. For norovirus, it isn't a reportable illness, so I don't have numbers, but there are thousands of those cases that happen every year. These things, norovirus in particular, is not as severe. It's usually self-limiting, but it will give a healthy person a few bad days, and for a person who already has some other underlying conditions, it has caused death. So,
how long has this particular area been condemned?
It's been at the same extent now for over 20 years.
So this is not a new marking? This is not a new area?
No.
Okay.
But who marks it? Is it marked by just the private owner lease, or is it marked by the state? That's my question.
Officer Morris, can you answer that?
In this particular area, there are some issues because of the liability. We have a boat ramp and a swimming beach, which are often closed at least a couple of weeks in the summer each year because of contamination. But those points where we have swimmers, jet skiers, skiers, boaters operating in there, it's very difficult to put a metal condemned area sign in that without offering yourselves up as an agency to tremendous liability of somebody running into one of those signs and interacting physically with one of those signs. The leaseholder is apprised of it because he needs to know, or she needs to know, where that delineation is, and if they want to move condemned oysters into a clean area, that's very handy for them, but it has to be under our supervision. Maybe possibly Mr. Stiles can speak to how often the river is monitored with the sampling also. It's not just a 12-month plan. They, on a monthly basis, I believe, go out and do samplings for the general areas, and they have specified areas for that.
So, yeah, we are sampling every 4 to 6 weeks, but this particular closure is a buffer zone that's in place because of the sewage outfall. It's a different category of closure. It's not one that's based on bacterial monitoring, because our biggest concern that's coming out of this area are going to be viral contaminants that monitoring wouldn't be an indicator of.
So this condemned area's extent is more based on modeling than actual testing?
Right.
Okay. One other question that I have here, the impact to the industry, you've spoken of it a little bit earlier here, if something like this went to market. Ms. Erskine had asked a question along those lines as well.
Okay. Well, the impact of the industry, we're fortunate that we haven't had to see outbreaks like this in Virginia in a very long time. I've had to follow up because product is shipped into Virginia from other states that has had to be recalled, and some very large companies have lost markets because of another state's issue. So it has a huge ripple effect when even a small area gets closed. The impact that is seen throughout the industry is huge. And another point about the tagging, you know, regardless of how the requirement is for the tagging, I have personally seen tags that say James River and nothing more. So it does happen. We had some happen this year in follow-up on Vibrio cases. So the reality is those are the things that we do see, and those are what we would have to use if we had to do a closure.
Other questions, Mr. Scott? Ms. Sullivan, please. You would like to ask some questions, I would guess.
I do have a few questions.
Thank you.
The original area that we marked on Exhibit 1?
It's all the way over there.
We identify on this exhibit the area that is the condemned area. Are you aware that the condemned area is, as the commissioner rightly pointed out, a modeled area based on the projections from the Newport Haynes sewage sanitation area? And how long ago was that area established?
It was reassessed every year.
I asked you when it was established.
When was that?
The condemned area.
The condemned area was, this particular condemned area would have been in the early
1990s. Okay. And has this area been tested since, tested in any way other than in the modeling capacity?
Yes.
To your knowledge. When?
Yeah, it's tested every month.
For what?
For bacteria.
And have you found, do you have any results from that area?
We do have, and we have three hours we found.
Was it at this time?
I don't know that.
Have you told Mr. Green in the past that you thought this was an area that could be reconsidered based on the modeling technique?
No, I didn't. We have a potential new method that is being evaluated by the national program, but it's not available to us right now. I've discussed that with Mr. Green, and I explained to him that if that happens to pass, that we would be more than willing to use that technique to improve. But right now, this is what's required at the national level. If we didn't follow these rules, we'd take a chance on none of our potential shelters being shipped out of school.
Okay. And with respect to your testimony concerning the tag, it's against the law for you to tag only with the name of the river. That's a separate violation of the law. So anyone who's tagging their oysters with just James River is breaking the law. Correct?
I've asked law enforcement to be in order, that's my understanding.
All right. Of this area, do you know why the area down the river is 6 miles that's marked off?
I don't understand the question.
Okay. Do you know the parameters of the condemned area?
Yes.
Okay. And what is the length of the condemned area?
I don't know. I don't know the exact length.
Is it longer than it is for other creeks or estuaries?
Every one is unique to the outfall and to the creek.
And that's the modeling that was established.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hold on a second.
Like not necessarily Mr. Skiles, but it points to the tagging issue. And, you know, there are laws that, you know, certainly pertain to tagging, but I'm personally seeing tags that have just said simply Chesapeake Bay. Clearly, there are laws surrounding tagging, but we have laws surrounding condemned areas, and those laws, you know, appear to be broken too, and we have the convictions to show that. Tags say Chesapeake Bay, and they come in here. You don't even know if it's from a state of Maryland or state of Virginia. So there are tagging issues out there as well.
Ms. Sullivan, will you stipulate for Mr. Skiles' testimony to, as you've cross-examined here, to carry forward through the rest of these cases?
Yes.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I do appreciate that. Do you have anyone you wish to call in this particular case for Mr. Green?
Yes, sir. We have witnesses, one would be Mr. Green himself.
Okay.
And the second would be Mr. Green, who I referenced earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's important to get his testimony on the record. I can view that as a proper if there's an objection to me doing it, and we can stipulate that testimony was the same for all nine.
appreciate that.
So,
let's get Mr. Green forward here and get him on the record, and it'll carry through then. Good to see you again, Mr. Green. I need to swear in, sir. You hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God, please state your name for the record.
Richard Green.
Thank you. Ms. Sullivan, please proceed.
What was your career prior to your retirement?
I was working in the fire department for 30 years with the Department of the Navy. I was in management for 15 years, helped manage for 15 years.
And how long have you been in the Navy to ground, sir, subject of this discussion?
I'm thinking it's right around 7 or 8 years right now on this particular lease.
For the record here, it's a lease, it's not ownership.
It's a lease here.
I'm still learning.
So the Commonwealth is a little proprietary towards its property.
With respect to the area that has been noted as being the condemned area, are you aware of the condemned area that is adjacent
yes,
to
I am.
Your...
Yes, it is. Right through the middle of it. I normally take PVCs and try to maintain it very strictly, but at times we have recreationals who come and tie to the poles and they'll get them right at the bottom and they'll attempt to pull them back. Sometimes they will move them one way or the other. Sometimes they move them off. Sometimes they move them in. And occasionally we've got to go back and straighten the line as much as possible.
During the period of time in question, was your area marked by any public officer or
no.
any public action?
No.
Okay. So you were the only one that was attempting to mark the area that
That's
was put down. And why do you do that?
Because I want to keep my men on the outside, and I'm very strict with them, and I tell them, and I warn them. If they're going to work with me, they need to stay on this outside. And I've had trouble with people in the past that I fire them. They don't work with me no more. This crew I've got now is a pretty decent bunch of guys. They try to adhere to it, other than the forces of nature and the winds and the weather, and people make mistakes. But they try to tend to stay very clear of everything, and I've been very well satisfied with these guys.
Okay. Can you describe the depth in the condemned area?
The condemned area, after you leave the offshore, it goes up in tiers. It's about two major tiers. You've got one where you come up from about 8-9 feet of water, and you'll come up to about maybe 5, 5.5, 6 feet of water. Then the last one will come up to about 3 feet, and it'll go right on up to about 1 foot.
So there are areas within the condemned area that a vessel could not go.
On some tides, on low tide, and some of these vessels draw more water than others. My vessel is very light drafted, so we can kind of get in there. We hit bottom on these certain places on some of these corners, but some of the other boats are very deep drafted, and much the other way they can get in there.
Which one is your vessel? Do you have an
ownership? The Sonora.
Okay. And which one would have difficulty getting into the shallower area?
I imagine the Patricia Ann and the Ashley H. And I'm not familiar with the Lucia on that too much.
Okay. All right. With respect to the specific events involving this event, did you receive information that your the guys that oysters were you on your grounds were the target of an investigation?
Yes. My stepson called me that Monday morning and said that Mike Morrison was there trying to write them all tickets and wanted to shovel all the oysters overboard. And I asked him, I said, make sure he checks your GPS.
Let's back up in time. I'm asking you what occurred before the date.
Oh, before? Okay.
Yes, sir.
On the Friday before the Monday, a friend of mine, which I don't believe he mentioned his name or not, heard a conversation between Mr. Morrison and two individuals at Deep Creek. And they were talking about the boats. They just pointed at the boats to get the names of the boats and the vessels.
Ms. Sullivan, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to object to something that somebody heard somebody else say who then told Mr. Green, and it does not, as far as I can tell, go to any of the code sections that we're establishing here today as a premise to the convictions.
Mr. Bill, that's why I said it could be a proper, but I will go to what action you took in response.
His name is Officer Morris, by the way, not Morrison.
I called. He said he was going to go write all the guys up Monday morning.
You can't say that. You have to say what you did in response.
Oh, what I did. Okay, what I did was after I heard what was going to happen, I called all the guys up Friday and Saturday and told each one of the captains, I said, something's going to happen Monday morning. Stay well offshore. I don't want no problems. Nothing to happen is going to cause any kind of a problem. Make sure you stay off there. And I called each and every captain and made them each one fully aware of what was going on. And that's why we were so angry about it.
When you received a report that your boats were being written up for violation, what did you do?
Well, I talked to my stepson, and I told him to see if Mike Marshall would check the GPS as he go aboard the boats. And he said he refused. He said he was not going aboard the boats. He's got his own GPS. He didn't want to look at theirs. So I, in turn, I called Mr. Behrman down at DMRC dispatches. And I said, Mr. Behrman, please send a boater down to dispatch another boater there to check the GPSs on these vessels. Because we have reason to believe that they were not in the wrong, that a certain person has already made it known that he's going to be down there. I'm wanting to write him up. Now, we'd like to have some evidence or something to show, you know.
And Ms. Sullivan, may I ask, what is the relevance pertaining to the issues actually before us here at this point here? The matters were tried in court. They were adjudicated in the court. Convictions were held.
I understand your position to take that very firmly, but I'm proffering this for the record. I would like to complete this portion of the testimony. It relates to the efforts of the oystermen to establish where they were and in good faith that they were not taking oysters from a condemned area. They go to mitigation.
Well, I believe that was a matter that was settled by the court.
It may go to mitigation.
I understand.
Okay.
Let's thank you, then. I understand more clearly now here. Let's keep it towards that point, please.
Go ahead. So you called Captain Berryman, I think.
That's correct. And I asked him to dispatch a boat down. We have reason beyond to believe that these guys were in the clear to go look at the GPSs. Just simply go down and look at all the GPSs on all four boats. The GPSs will either prove them guilty or prove them innocent, I guess. I waited on him to call back, and he didn't call back. So I gave him a few minutes, and then I turned around and called Mr. Lauderman, Officer Lauderman. And I gave him the same deal. I told him everything of what was happening. I said, please dispatch another inspector there just to look at the GPSs on the boat. And he said he was going to check it out, and he was going to get back with me. And I waited for a little while, and I didn't hear nothing. So I called Mr. Behrman back again, Officer Behrman, Captain Behrman. And he said, well, we talked it over, and we decided to leave it up to Mr. Morrison's discretion. And I said, well, that's kind of hard, you know. But, I mean, I've been with a lot of things, even with the government. You know, I've worked for the government for 30 years. And when you got a problem that's in between two stages, you're obligated to go around that stage and find out the truth. And that's all that we were trying to get to was the truth of the matter. Why, you know, what had happened here.
Well, at the risk of driving this off track, did you testify in court?
Yes, I did. I told the judge that.
Has this not already been adjudicated, ma'am?
Well, my representation wasn't the very best. I'm going to be honest with you. And I don't know what happened. We all have a lot of conclusions on what happened. The guys were led to believe once they got the ticket and paid the fine, that was the end of it. And I told them all I would pay every penny to appeal the case. I'd buy the lawyers and everything if they wanted to appeal it because it was wrong. What had happened was wrong. But most of them say, well, he's just paid the $300, forget about it, and go on back to work. And that's generally the feeling, that's why most things happen the way they do, because it's less problem. It's easy to do that way, but it ain't always easy. But the truth, I'm a person that's stuck on honesty and the truth, and I don't go no other way. I don't play games. I'm straight and honest about things. And if I'm wrong, you hang me by the neck. But if I'm not wrong, you know, you're going to have to look out.
Ms. Sullivan, do you have something to add here? Is there something to add here with Mr. Green's testimony?
Okay.
Is there more to add with Mr. Green's testimony?
Where were the oysters
placed
that were taken off the boat?
Get them over the wreck shoals, which is a sanctuary, a public rock sanctuary.
And were they marked?
No, they didn't put no signs. I mean, if we move any oysters in the river, no matter where they go, included oyster, required to have yellow flags around because that indicates that it is, even if it's on a sanctuary. Some innocent person may come along and may steal them by accident for whatever reason, but if he eats them and if they're all polluted, still for the protection of the people, no matter what.
Okay. Anything else, Ben? Any questions from the commission? We'll stipulate to Mr. Green's continued testimony throughout. Okay, that'd be great. Thank you, Mr. Green. I appreciate it, sir. Mr. Breen. Yes.
You state your full name, please.
Timothy Breen.
Okay. On the date in question, is that the first time that you had worked those rounds?
Yes.
And you
need to face the mic?
Can you hear?
He's kind of low, though.
Is that the first time you'd ever worked that particular area?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And did you believe that you were outside the contaminated area?
Yes, ma'am.
And was Mr. Turner on the boat with you?
Yes, ma'am.
And did you at any time take oysters out of the condemned area?
No, ma'am.
Did you take oysters out of the area that was not condemned?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you hold a multiple of licenses?
Yes, ma'am.
Is it your request that you be permitted to retain some of your other permits?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. They are listed on the commission summary. Did you ever attempt to endanger a member of the public by eating condemned oysters?
No, ma'am.
Do you have any other profession?
No, ma'am.
How long have you been working on the water?
3 years.
Thank you.
Any questions from the commission?
Now, a moment, I can say something, or...
Yes, sir. You can say anything you want.
This day...
Within reason.
I know I've been found guilty and all that, and I'm fine with that. You know, I have my day in court, but I just want to say, you know, I'm agreeable with, you know, dealing with the consequences for what I did and all that, but to say I was just, you know, a mate on the boat. I'm just a call boy, and I was just, you know, in the boat culling the oysters, and Mr. Turner was obviously steering the boat. It was my permit. And I understand when you sign the permit, you have to abide by the laws and this and that. And I told David, you know, I want to be in the good area, you know, keep us over here. There's no reason, you know, for us to break any laws. And I asked Mr. Gene, the boat next to us, I said, are we in the good area, you know? We're not in the polluted area. He said, yeah, you're fine. You're in the good area. So, you know, we worked in that area, and I understand, I guess, whatever happened in court, you know, guilty finding, something may have went wrong, but I just want to ask that somebody could, you know, find some mercy for me or something, you know. I understand I got to face some consequences. I'll be glad to face some probation or whatever. I don't mind. I don't break the law. You know, I go out every day and we catch our clean oysters. We come back. I've been checked by Mr. Morris, Officer Corey, Officer Votto. Since then, I haven't done anything wrong, and I don't ever plan on it. I guess, you know, I was in the wrong situation with the wrong person.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brink.
That particular day, you were asking for guidance from the Sonora?
Yes,
ma'am.
That's your first day out. Mr. Brink, hold on a second here. There's some commissioners have some questions. Ms. Haney?
Did I just understand you'd only worked that private ground one day? That was the one and only day that you worked?
That was the first day.
And you were not captain or in the pilot house at all? You were
crew? No, ma'am.
Crew. Thank you.
Got a question.
Mr. Zeta.
I'm looking at the council indicated your licenses on the summary here that we have here. And she indicated that, you know, if we would consider not suspending all licenses, which license would you pick to suspend if you had a choice? You see what I'm talking about up here?
Yes, sir.
All right, let me just read them. I don't know what you're looking at, so let me just read them. It says here, commercial registration. The second one's oysters by hand tongs. You see that?
Yes, sir.
Then you see public oyster, all gear, user fee. Then you have a Class B gillnet permit, a gillnet 600 feet or less, and then shell fish icing permit and an oyster aquaculture harvester permit. That's the ones I have.
Okay. To be honest with you, sir, I can't do anything else but oyster fish.
The council indicated you know, if you don't suspend all your licenses. And so I'm asking you, if you had a choice, which is the ones that you want suspended?
I guess just... It doesn't have all my licenses on here.
That's why I read them, because all I have is right here.
Yeah, well, I should have a public hand scrape license, and I guess just this oyster harvester permit. Is that for the dredge on private ground? I'm just asking that I be put on probation. If you're going to take my license, I guess I'm not going to be able to do anything. I can fish gillnets, but I only have gillnet, and that's a lot of money in that, you know. That's a lot of gear. Oyster.
Well, I'm just kind of following up with your counsel here, okay? Your counsel said, hey, look, guys, don't take all of his licenses, okay? So I'm trying to find out what's more important to you, and you know. If you're telling me you don't know how, you don't know how, but
I guess I could keep my fishing permits, but I'd like to be able to oyster by hand to them.
I mean,
Mr. Close,
I kind of feel for him, because I've worked for other people when I was younger, and I worked for myself, you know, but when I'm captain of the vessel, don't nobody tell me where to go. Period. You know. So, I mean, I feel like in your case it's a little different. I mean, you had the license, but you wasn't the captain of the vessel, but ultimately the captain of the vessel says where it's going. Period. You know, I mean, I think you were just caught up in a wrong place. You know, not the wrong place at the wrong time, but just happened to be however. But, you know, I feel for you, but, you know, if I had to say anything, it'd probation.
I guess I have a question for the counsels. You made a statement earlier that under someone's opinion, whether it was yours or the legal fight going on, that our guidelines are mandatory?
That was written on the package that's been provided to you by the commission.
Right.
It says it's mandatory.
So, but by that statement, But by that guideline being mandatory, then if we follow that guidelines, we have to suspend his licenses for a year.
Well, they are not mandatory. Mm-hmm. I think your counsel will agree that he's argued that they're not mandatory.
And I agree with that, too, because I was here when we made these guidelines, and we stipulated they were guidelines, and, mm-hmm. and that we had total leeway of being more stringent or less stringent of the guidelines, but you had made the statement that the guidelines are mandatory, which...
No, sir, I was trying to point out that mandate is used on page 2 of the description here, and I didn't want there to be any confusion by the members that mandate's not mandatory.
Okay.
Page 2 right here.
I agree that they're not mandatory. I just wanted to make sure
that
they weren't mandatory.
That's my clarification.
If you want me to...
If
I may, I'll just go ahead and give the kind of legal underpinning of my argument in the other case, which is 2.2-4001 defines guidance document under the APA. And says, any document developed by a state agency or staff that provides information or guidance of general applicability to the staff or public to interpret or implement statutes or the agency's rules or regulations, excluding, you know, certain things. Nothing in this definition shall be construed or interpreted to expand the identification or release of any document otherwise protected by law. So that's a FOIA type thing. But so that definition, is kind of in contrast to a rule or a regulation which does have the force of law and is mandatory. And, you know, guidance documents are required to be listed in the Virginia Register every year and are listed under the agency in the regulatory town hall, and this document is one of those listed.
All right, well, another thing, and
yes, sir.
This is a question, I guess, to the commission and to the council. Yeah. They're all convicted of oystering in condemned grounds. They've got the convictions. It's done. That's a bad thing. You shouldn't oyster in condemned grounds. Don't do it. And all this, he said, she said. You know, my inclination, going through every one of these guys' previous records, would be to put them on 2-year probation, be done with it. If they're repeat offenders, we'll get them back. Well, we can stay here until 10 o'clock. But that's kind of, and I don't even know if that even follows any procedure that we're allowed to do. But that's basically what my feeling is.
The commission has wide latitude here, and the guidelines are just the guidelines, and commission decide whatever is appropriate.
Yeah, in general, it's bad stuff. Don't wish you're in condemned grounds. Just don't do it. But that would be my thing. We put them on the longest probation we put them on just so we can have tabs on them. If they don't do anything bad, we'll never hear from them again. And if they do, we get them back. And hopefully never see them again.
Mr. Cedra.
Along that lines, what I would suggest we do is, and we can work an arrangement with counsel if she represents the rest of them. Instead of going through this with hours, we can work out an agreement. But what I would go along with what he says is what we may want to do is suspend all of their licenses like we normally do for a period of 2 years and then suspend that suspension on probation. In other words, if let's take this guy here. If we do that with this guy, we never see him again, then he does his probation for 2 years and he's clean, okay? But if say next week he decides to go back out there and get some condemned oysters, get convicted again, then we've already imposed the sentence. All we got to do is revoke the suspension of the suspended license, as opposed to bringing him back in here and you know making a. If we just put him on probation, you don't have nothing. If he violates, what have you done? Nothing. What I'm saying is you need to suspend all his licenses for whatever term would be 2 years, and then suspend that suspension, placed him on probation for whatever period we want to put him on, a year or 2 years. And you know, I like to kick that around. If we're all in agreement of that, we ask counsel here, is that what she wants to do with the rest of them? Because I think all these are the same day. I think all of them the same day, and it's the same situation. And I think we've got a little different spin on these cases as opposed to some of the others, and basically these guys are honest guys, and they were at the wrong place at the wrong time, and I don't know what happened or didn't happen, but I think if they've been good for all these years and they don't have any criminal record, then maybe we could take a chance on them.
Some have a couple, but they're all minor stuff. They're not like the normal guys we have to deal with repeatedly like our first guy.
Right. Mr. Ball, would you
if there's a path forward here and that would help that, I'd be in favor of that. Let's take a 10-minute recess here. Mr. Cedra?
Before we recess, maybe you want to get a feeling of the commissioners here, whether they like that idea, don't like it, or, you know, because if she goes and talks to her people and then everybody says, no, that's not what I was thinking, it's a waste of time.
Mr. Sessions and Mr. Isker.
I like that idea, and I can weigh in on that. I think these are good people that wrong place, wrong time, or whatever, but your suspension scenario, I like that, so that if they go out there in a condemned area again, then the revocations kick in, but not until then.
I guess the question, counsel, can we even do that?
Good question. I'm going to have to think about it for a bit.
I know we can take their license. I know we can put them on probation, but I don't think it's just suspend a revocation.
I'll say my concern with it is that I don't know if it would. So essentially, under the code, we can punish you for up to 2 years. And my concern is, however it's structured, will that punishment extend beyond the 2 years? Is my only concern. So maybe we can talk about it if that's something that they're agreeable to, but I'll, certainly think about it and do as much research as I can in the if we recess during that recess.
Mr. Erskine, you had your hand up.
I did, and I guess my concern is I saw Mr. Breen as an individual that was not a captain of a boat, and he was a mate on the boat, I don't know. I haven't gone through completely all the other ones to see if they're mates or captains on the boat. When I read this previous to the commission, Mr. Turner was the one that I was really concerned about, that obviously exhibited a past with a certain number of problems. I guess I don't disagree with what's being talked about, but there was several instances in the fall where we had some warm water violations, either no shading on vessels, or there was one in particular about somebody that harvested oysters within the legal time frame, put them in the back of a pickup, and went somewhere else to deliver these oysters, no prior convictions, and we revoked his license for all licenses for a year. I just want to make sure that, you know, when it deals with public health significance, that we're not sending the wrong message by saying, hey, 2-year probation, just come here and get probation. These are serious violations that impact not just the people that are here convicted of these violations, but the entirety of the industry. So I don't disagree with the direction you're going in, but I want to make that clear.
That's why I'm indicating what we should do or suggesting is that we, in fact, impose the sentence, that we're going to revoke your licenses for 2 years, okay? And then what we're going to do, because that's going to send the message out there, and then we just take, because based on each individual case upon these are good guys, that we're going to suspend that suspension. And with a clear understanding, if you get a violation of one of our rules and regulations for anything, then we're going to go ahead and revoke that suspension, and you're going to lose your licenses for 2 years.
Well, I think we're also going to have to think a little bit more here about just that point here where you break one of our violations while on this suspended sentencing. I'll note that it's been 4 months since the date of conviction for these gentlemen in question right now. I think we need to keep that in mind if we're going to say, if you're violating this, well, under suspended sentence, so to speak, is the benchmark for kicking it in going to be a charge or a conviction?
Conviction is going to be
or a conviction whose appeal date has expired.
Yeah.
In which case, then, we could be talking up to 7 months to a year. So let's keep that in mind as well. Mr. Cesar.
Normally, and of course, I look at the stuff the way we do it in court. Normally, if you get a charge, good example is a DUI. You get, you're on a suspended 2 years for a first offense DUI, and say it's the 23rd month and 10 days, and you get another DUI charge. That DUI charge may not be heard for another 6 months or a year, but it relates back to the fact that you got that charge while you were on your suspension, and that's what I would propose here, is because we know that it takes time to go through the court, appeals, and all that kind of stuff, but it's on the date. If they get convicted, it relates back to the date of the charge.
That's close.
The only concern I have with that, in which I think that's fine, but, I mean, first offender DUI, they can still go to work. These people won't go to work. You know, if you get convicted of a DUI, I can still go to work. If they get convicted in here of revocation of the license, their livelihood's gone. So, I mean, that's something we really need to take in consideration here. I mean, I do know what we're doing and talking about is tough, you know. And I say all these guys are good guys in here, but, you know, on the same token, I just, you know, first offense, we can look at it a little different. Second offense, you know, I'm just talking about the work issue as far as what goes on with a DUI.
Well, does someone have a suggestion for a course of action here? Do you want to take 10-15 minute recess here? You can consult with your clients. Mr. Hall can do a little bit of quick research. Does it gather back here in 15 minutes? All right. That's what we'll do. We'll reconvene at 3:25. 3:20, excuse me. Okay, we're back. There's been discussions here, many of them. Mr. Hull, can you summarize the path forward here? And Ms. Sullivan, well, how about before we do that? Ms. Sullivan, do you have some stipulations or suggestions here from your standpoint.
Your Honor, in the break, we have discussed the possibility of these gentlemen receiving a suspended sentence with them being on probation for a one-year period. If there is an offense which occurs within the one-year period but they are not convicted, the revocation of their license would run from the date of the conviction, and they would appear back before this commission as a repeat offender. Did I state that correctly, Mr. Hall?
Yes, but just to be clear, what we're doing is we're instituting the original two-year revocation upon the conviction. So, you know, if you violate and are convicted in year, say, or in month five, then your revocation period will be 1 year and 7 months. So it's whatever the balance of the revocation period is from the date of conviction.
And we understand that if they have an offense with boating operations, such as a light being out, that would not be considered a violation. This would involve substantive offenses under 28.2.
Or the regulations promulgated thereunder.
Or the regulations promulgated thereunder, Mr. Hall. And everyone is in agreement with that and thankful for your consideration of that resolution.
Okay.
We're going to need a motion to do that or what?
We would need a motion to do that.
I got a motion for you.
I'll second.
Here's the motion. And if you follow with me there, Attorney Sullivan, I move that in accordance with Section 28-2-232 of the Code of Virginia, move to revoke, and each waterman's name goes here, all Mr. So-and-so's licenses to take or catch fish, shellfish, or marine organisms for a period of 2 years from the date of this commission meeting, January 27, 2015 through January 26, 2017, and revoke waterman's fishing privileges within the Commonwealth titled waters for a period of 2 years from the date of this commission meeting, January 27, 2015 through January 26, 2017, and do hereby suspend said revocations and place watermen on a 12-month period of probation beginning with the date of this meeting, which is January 27, 2015, requiring all the watermen to obey the laws of the Commonwealth and the substantive regulations of the VMRC, period. If such violation occurs during the 12-month period, come upon a finding of conviction in a court and upon notice to VMRC, watermen's suspension heretofore imposed shall be revoked automatically, and all licenses heretofore issued shall be revoked without further hearing and without notice, and that said licenses will be revoked for the remainder of the 2 years probation. Is that your understanding?
With the exception of the offenses being under 28.2 and the regulations promulgated thereunder. I think your language was somewhat broader, and I wasn't sure exactly what it encompassed.
Well, 28.2-232 deals with revocation of licenses. That's what he's talking about.
Right. So your motion said you have to obey the laws of the Commonwealth. What we're trying to make sure is that, like, a being caught for drunk driving or something would not trigger the...
I would try to amend it to be under...
Title 28.2.
Title 28.2.
Right, let's just strike out the laws of the Commonwealth then. Would that be in...
But we need to, again, put in... So where you put in laws of the Commonwealth, it should be... shall not commit any offense under Title 28.2, just to make sure that they're not committing a natural resources violation that we have jurisdiction over.
Okay.
Or even better, we could say the fisheries subtitle, but we don't need to get into that much.
All right. How about... let's see. Shall obey all... regulations under Title 20, no, that's not right. Should obey all regulations of VMRC in reference to what?
I'm looking through.
Yeah. See, just requiring, well, I said all the laws of Commonwealth, we'll strike that out.
So obey all provisions of Title 28.2 and the regulations of VMRC.
Okay. Okay, we're going to amend that to indicate requiring the watermen to obey all of the laws of Title 28.2 and the regulations of VMRC. Is that right?
Promulgated under 28.2.
Okay. All the regulations of VMRC are, so.
Is that okay with you?
Yes, sir, with that amendment.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
That would be my motion.
Can I second now?
Yes. Motion by Mr. Zedron, second by Mr. Stephens.
Can I clarify this just a little bit?
Yes.
2-year revocation, suspended.
Suspended.
With a 1-year probation. If there is an offense of the natural resources violation, natural resource laws and regulations within that year of probation, the revocation is triggered automatically for the duration of the 2 years.
Upon conviction in the court.
This also includes the revocation of title fishing privileges as well.
Right. That's what I said. The license is hereto suspended.
And your language was great, Mr. Zedron, here, just to clarify for everybody here, it would be administrative. It would happen.
Administrative without notice and without hearing.
If there's a conviction while on probation for this, you come and get your license.
And for the record, let me read this. This applies to Timothy Charles Brin, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the record. Joseph L. Carter. You need to speak in the mic there because they're recording. All right. William E. Crewe.
Yes, sir.
William E. Crewe, Jr.
Yes, sir.
Kenneth Lee Green.
Yes, sir.
William Jean Green, Jr.
Yes, sir.
William P. Robbins. William Allen West.
Yes.
And William T. West.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion. Mr. Erskine.
as I stated earlier, I understand where the commission's going with this, but I disagree. I think these are serious violations. I was willing to take these a little bit more step by step and looking at the mates a little bit differently than the four captains. But I think a revocation at this time would be more appropriate than a suspended revocation and 2 years of probation. I'll remind the commission and everybody out there that we've revoked licenses for 1 year for individuals that committed NSSP violations or warm water regulations for a period of 1 year. And that wasn't done years ago. That was done recently. So I will not be able to support this motion.
Any other comments or discussions?
Well, I'll say I have some queasy feelings about this myself as well. This commission has struggled for 4 years with the Marine Police vigorously enforcing oyster violations. It remains a problem. It remains a continuous problem. I'm definitely very concerned that this is sending a message out there that it's not that serious. But it is that serious. And in my mind here, it's even more serious to harvest from a condemned area. It's one thing, I think, to steal from somebody else and steal from somebody else's leased grounds or steal from the entire waterman community by pillaging the public oyster rocks. I think it's another thing to take oysters from condemned waters that could really cause serious health problems to humans and to seriously damage the entire industry and the entire industry's reputation. I take these very seriously. So I'm a little queasy about this, and I'll decide in the next minute or two whether I'm going to support it. Any other comments?
Yes.
Mr. Zedron.
I think, you know, we don't have the average violator here, and you know, I'm probably one of the guys that stick those guys the worst when they come in here. And I think, you know, all these are good people. The captain's in here. You know, it means a lot that the captain said, look, you know, this wasn't right. He tried to do what he thought was right and get it, you know, reconsidered, so to speak, by asking for these GPS coordinates and stuff like that. And I'm not requiring the police to do that or anything like that. But I think it goes to the intent here is that these guys, instead of and I got to look at this, you know, here's a group of fishermen, watermen, that were sort of given a tip. Hey, look, these guys will be out there looking for you on Monday. So why would they be over there in the condemned area? And I don't know what the answer to that is or isn't. I mean, it don't make no difference. But then for the owner, so to speak, you know, he steps up to the plate and says, look, these are good guys. You know, I fire the bad guys. And he didn't get up here and say, look, I never do anything wrong. He's done something wrong. But when he found out about it, he fired the guys that did it. And that's what we want to encourage. So I think we're sending the right message out here. And that's why I made the verification for 2 years and then make it automatically if they run afoul of it. And so they've been given their chance. They've been good people for their life. They can stay good people. And if they don't, then we can take their licenses, and then they'll come back in here again, and there won't be no second chance. And that's why I think we are sending the right message here that we're fair, because each case is based on its own. And I, just like we have some of these, you know, permits where people get after-acquired permits. And we saw one in here last year where the lady had gone everywhere and done everything, and a core engineer told her, you don't need VMRC. The locals told him, you don't need VMRC. I mean, we're posing a $3,000 fine. But we didn't. We treated that on its own. And I think this case is on its own. And I think we're sending the right message.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Zedra. Any other discussion? Well, you've heard the motion. You've heard the second. Call the vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Noes?
No.
Chair votes no as well here, but the motion passes 5-2.
Thank you. And I will perhaps ask that the Commonwealth mark these grounds as a remedial measure.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips.
The responsibility of the individual.